back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a beautiful spring week. Lamar Jackson signed. The Orioles are playing great baseball. Luke Jones is here to monitor and chronicle all things at a Baltimore Positive. You can follow his work at Baltimore Luke. And, of course, if there's any breaking news, as there was last week, we had plenty of it. You'll get it first on the WNST Tech Service, all brought to you by Coons Baltimore Ford. Luke, what's going on, man? Are you going to come have a crab cake with me at some point now that the Lamar watch is all over with? Maybe over at McFalls on Thursday. I got a lottery ticket for you if you come by.
That sounds great. We've talked about this so much, and we'll continue to talk about it because you and I have differences of opinions of Lamar and all that, and that's fine. It makes for interesting radio, but can I just say, and I know I echoed this when we first talked about the reaction to the contract, I am glad it's over. I mentioned in a previous segment the dark cloud that was just hanging over the entire organization, the entire fan base. I think it just gotten to the point where it just wasn't healthy. Everyone felt the way they felt about it. And I didn't feel like after a while, anyone's opinion was really changing. But I think the one thing that everyone could agree with at a certain point in time was, can we have a resolution? Whether that's Lamar getting a big contract, whether that's Lamar getting traded, what, you know, signed to an offer sheet elsewhere, whatever it is, I think everyone was ready to move on from that part of the conversation. And now the focus, the attention now shifts back onto the field, not just with Lamar Jackson, but with the 2023 Baltimore Ravens, who completed a six-man draft class. And, you know, not the sexiest of draft classes beyond, I guess, Zay Flowers in the first round, which, you know, wide receivers always a new shiny toy. And I think, you know, there's some very easy comparisons to be made to Hollywood Brown, but I think Zay Flowers, 5'9", 185, little more toughness, a little more physicality, a little more willing to mix it up and get yards after the catch maybe than Marquise Brown was. But you know, you look at the rest of the draft class, clearly a focus on the future, as is usually the case when you're talking about later round picks. But I think if you're the Ravens, and I know you mentioned this in a previous segment, it's kind of by default, you're just going to say you feel like you got better because, well, you added players that you didn't have anymore, right? Even if the players aren't very good, typically you're not going to get worse by doing that. But I think for the Ravens, they felt like it was a very productive weekend. And it was very telling. Eric DaCosta, after the draft had concluded on Saturday, late Saturday afternoon into the early evening, he acknowledged they're tired, but he said it was a good tired. And I think most of that context, obviously the Lamar situation, but we also know that these draft classes, these draft hauls, that these picks that they make, it's at least a year, if not for some of these guys, a couple years in the making. So there's a lot of work, a lot of boots on the ground, a lot of sweat equity that goes into these picks. And you know that of the six players that they took, certainly they're not going to go 6 for 6. It never goes quite that well, but you're hoping that you came away with at least a few guys that are going to help your team to varying degrees over the next few years.
Well, yeah, we could sit here and talk about day two and day three picks and how that affects the team and guys running special teams. And, heck, this week I've got a young man from Dundalk that's going to camp with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, you know, there's a dream for all of these guys. But the reality for the Ravens at cornerback and the reality for them at linebacker, which we've discussed, that there's an abundance. We talked about the Orioles having too many infielders and, you know, never enough pitching, even though it feels like they have enough pitching right now. The back end, which was your complaint for a long, long time. I remember way back when all you did was bitch about the secondary in the offseason and Ozzie Newsome and all that, that there needs to be a veteran signing, that they would have maybe gone with corner at 22 instead of wide receiver. I don't know if we were shocked on the other side of Odell Beckham. And he's not long-term. We sort of know that based on what he'd want to be compensated, especially if he does pan out this year. And they win that Super Bowl that Lamar's talked about and promised. So, but for the back end and for the defense and for what they've done offensively now, which is this deep, rich wide receiver room with all of these guys are going to make you forget about James Prochet and Devin Duvernay and Tylan Wallace and all the rest of these guys that John had to sort of remember on note cards as he was going through to make sure he didn't offend anybody. But the secondary in that room right now, what Marcus Peter, what's going to happen here?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to be interesting. And even as someone is listening to us talk about this, keep in mind we are now at the point where we are passing the deadline for the compensatory pick formula. That wouldn't factor in for Marcus Peters, of course, because he, it was a Raven, so it's not as though they're worried about losing comp pick, the compensation part of this. But for someone like Auchi Yassin, who is someone that they visited with earlier in the free agent process, anyone that was an unrestricted free agent, you get to the Monday after the draft, you get to the 4 p.m. deadline, they no longer count against the compensatory pick formula. We know, if we know anything about the Ravens, we know they love compensatory picks. I mean, that's evident over the course of their entire history and where they rank in terms of comp picks over the years. But I think that's significant because they clearly need to bring in at least one veteran corner, if not a couple. And keep in mind, that could also be done via trade. We already mentioned, just spitballing the idea of, is there a Patrick Queen for some other team's slot corner kind of deal out there? And again, I don't know that. I'm just throwing it out there as a talking point, but they clearly need to add there. You look at the roster offensively, it looks pretty set. They've got to figure out left guard, but they've got Ben Cleveland. They've got a couple other internal candidates. I'm not saying necessarily the sixth round rookie whose name I'm still scared to try to pronounce over the air at this point, but they have candidates there. And there are typically, you'll find some veterans out there that if push comes to shove, you can kind of patchwork that together and get by, especially having Ronnie Stanley to the left guard's left and Tyler Linderbaum to his right. So offensively, they're pretty much set, right? They've got work to do. They've got to install new offense, got to have Lamar Jackson come in and build rapport with Odell Beckham and Zay Flowers, but you feel good about that. Defensive line, while there's certainly some questions long term, when you look at the contract status of a Justin Madubuike, a Broderick Washington, you look at the age of a Michael Pierce, of a Brent Urban, they're pretty much in place on the D line. You'd love to see a couple young guys step forward that could be pieces for the future, but you're good there for 2023, even if it's not a great group. I think it's solid at the very least. Inside linebacker, we've already talked about Patrick Cream. We'll see how that plays out, but you have Roquan Smith there. I think even if it's the rookie Trenton Simpson next to Roquan, I think they'll be okay there. You paid Roquan Smith $100 million to be okay there, and I think they will be. Edge rusher, I mean, they added Tavius Robinson. You still have high expectations for Odafe Oweh, who I think at this point, he's kind of under the microscope this year. This year three, he needs to start living up to the hype. David Ajabo, fully healthy offseason. I think they're expecting big things from him. You have Tyus Bowser, but is there a Justin Houston reunion on the horizon? I think that's a distinct possibility. And maybe that comes over the summer like it did the last couple of years. But you look at corner right now. Marlon Humphrey, you feel great about, right? Three-time Pro Bowl corner. He's your number one, no question about it. And even his versatility, knowing he can play on the outside or you can move him inside to play the nickel in certain spots, depending on the matchup any given week. But beyond that, I look at where they are, and with no disrespect to Caillou Blue Kelly, who they drafted in the fifth round out of Stanford, a four-year starter. His father played in the NFL. A nice pedigree, but he's a fifth-round pick. You're certainly not looking at him as someone you're targeting to play as a rookie, other than just on special teams. So, who is it right now on paper without a veteran or two being added to the mix? I mean, yeah, Brandon Stevens, who's done some nice things, but are you ready to make him your number two corner? That's a step a little too far for me. You
Well,
have
let me ask you
Damarrion
this. Are you
Williams and
ready to
Jalen
make
Armour.
Marcus Peters your number two corner? And at what price do you think he can still play? Do they think he can still play? Is he done being an earner in that sort of Jimmy Smith way where he'll hang on, on moxie and certainly a dog? I mean, Ozzie loves him. I mean, like, they love him. Like, if there's a place for him to play in the league at a fair price, because nobody's going to pay him $10 million a year, right? They saw the tape. But how do you feel about him? Does that feel locked down if they bring him back at 4 million because that or whatever the number is that they can afford? Is he the answer?
Well, first of all, they should be able to afford a reasonable deal at this point. We need to see the Lamar contract structure, but the assumption is they've cleared some cap space compared to what he would have been at 32.4. Because, you look at these deals typically year one, they are pretty forgiving in terms of the cap numbers. So financially, you know, cap structure wise, they should be okay to make a move. Look, if you're talking about Marcus Peters signing him to a long-term deal or anything like that, I'd be uncomfortable. But if you're talking about him in a 2023 light, I don't think, you know, while there was some drop off last year, I don't think he played so poorly that you're looking at him as a liability or a guy that's not still a starting caliber corner in this league. So I would absolutely be open to that. Now, Rock Ya-Sin would be someone that's a little bit younger, you know, never the caliber of player of Marcus Peters in his prime, but certainly someone that you would sign and would say, okay, he's going to be a starting corner for you. So,
well, the thought that they went after Slay and how that might have worked out, right? Like,
right,
how the offseason, Purple Rain 3, if I'm writing it, is that's how close they were to spending a lot of money. That's how important the position felt to them 6 weeks ago, right? That they were going to spend a lot of money and make a splash. And instead, they wound up spending that on a wide receiver. Really, that's what happened,
yeah,
with the money for this year.
No, I agree with you. I think if they had signed Darius Slay, then, yeah, I don't think Odell Beckham would be a Raven right now. Probably not. At least not at for $15 million. So,
and then maybe Lamar Jackson wouldn't be a Raven. Maybe, maybe. I don't know, right? For $185 million, I think Lamar was going to come in either way. That's
yeah, right. And I'll still maintain that I think the Jalen Hurts deal was way more influential on getting this done than signing Odell Beckham. And, you know, Beckham may have warmed up the temperature a little bit, but I still think it comes back to the Hurts deal and they're just being that other price point.
Well, from a football team standpoint, they offered the money to Slay. They were ready to go. So, like, according to him, right? So, at the end of the day, they prioritized. When they got together in Jupiter with Steve and smoked cigars and had lemonade out on the deck, the priority was, let's go get the corner. Let's take care of that. We don't, you know, Marcus, we're done with him. We're going to do this. And then the kid turned them down, and that turned into this. I mean, it really is that seems to me I don't have the narrative wrong.
Well, first of all, Darius Slay is not a kid. He's actually a little older than Marcus Peters. So that's part of where maybe you take a little bit of pause anyway. But he was with the Eagles. He was still with the Eagles, right? I mean, he never actually got released. It was just one of those cases where, you know, that player's kind of in that limbo where might get traded and you kind of see how it's going to play out. And they talk to some other teams. Again, this is according to him. The Ravens have never commented on that because that would technically be tampering, you know, from a legal standpoint as it pertains to the league. But, you know, I don't think it was even necessarily like, oh, we're going to go get him, because they couldn't have known that because he wasn't a scheduled free agent. You know, that was going to be a cap related move. But obviously Philadelphia ultimately worked it out and Slay stayed put. But, you know, you're always, you know, when they meet down in Florida and they have their summit in January, you're mapping out different paths, right? It's just like GPS. You want to get to a destination, which is a Super Bowl, right? Or, you know, AFC Championship, whatever it is, however you want to categorize it, but or characterize it. But you have different paths, right? You can upgrade your offense. You can have an amazing defense. But I think what's obvious and was still obvious going into the draft, and that's where I think it was kind of telling to me that even in the third and fourth round, when there had been some names of interest at the cornerback position in the draft class that fell down the board a little bit, at least compared to what draft pundits thought, that they didn't go after those players, probably tells you what they thought about this corner draft class collectively. And that's not to say they didn't like Deontay Banks or, you know, guys that were drafted in the first round, but they like Zay Flowers. They really like Zay Flowers. So, but that's where you come back to understanding how the rules work, understanding the post-draft May 1st deadline for the compensatory pick formula. Keep in mind, just a couple years ago, I'm not saying it worked out nicely, but Alejandro Villanueva fit that category. They signed him after the draft, and they did not have to give up a comp pick in order to do that. So, you know, do they have a handshake agreement in place for a Rock Ya-Sin? Well, we'll find out here pretty quickly, or we should anyway. In the case of Marcus Peters,
the fact that they didn't draft a corner. Like, if you're just, you know, Joe Baggy Diamond sitting at the corner of the bar, you're yelling corner, corner. But to your mind, they have a solution.
They think they have a solution right now. Does that mean it's guaranteed to work out? Sure. But my point is, I would be stunned if they are not bringing in at least one veteran cornerback of note, whether it's a handshake agreement with Marcus Peterson. Keep in mind, until Lamar actually physically signs the deal, their cap, they're still kind of in flux in terms of their cap as far as where they stand right now. So keep just, that's just something to keep in mind here, at least over the next week or two, until he physically comes in and signs the deal and it's quote unquote official. But that said, handshake agreement in place with a Marcus Peters or a Rock Ya-Sin or some other corner that's out there, I'd be shocked if we're talking about mandatory mini camp. So I'm not even talking training camp, just mid-June. I'd be shocked if we're at that point and Brandon Stevens and Damarian Williams are their number two and number three corners, you know, lining up. So I think you're going to see something. Again, do I know what it is exactly at this point? No. Does it mean that the cornerback position could be a little bit of a question mark? Because, again, you are talking about Marcus Peters being another year older or bringing someone else in that's not an all-pro kind of corner. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But it's definitely – that's clearly the big position. Right now, if you're going to say – if you're going to ask me, Luke, what's the big position on either side of the football that right now could really harm their chances of being a serious contender? There are few ways for a season to unravel more quickly than having issues at the cornerback spot. So that's where, again, I'm making the assumption that there's some contingency plans here in place. Maybe not even contingency. Maybe it kind of morphed into what their plan was even just a few weeks ago, and they were going to wait after the draft and kind of see how it played out and then revisit a Marcus Peters or a Rock Ya-Sin or someone like that.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke, monitoring all things Orioles this week. Orioles in Kansas City and, of course, Atlanta. We're going to be at McFall's Oyster and Reel doing a crab cake tour in Middle River on Thursday afternoon. Just got a confirmation that washed up, sitting back on his rocking chair, head coach Pete Carinci is going to be coming over after his retirement soiree with the heavy hors d'oeuvres on Saturday night over Catonsville. So we have word that Pete's going to be joining us on Thursday as well, so we're looking forward to that. We'll be giving away Scratch Austin Marilotte. Pete's going to get one of these. Now he's retired, he's going to need it. So hopefully he wins $10,000. The throwback for the Maryland Lottery, the scratch-offs, and the Crab Cake Tour. We got dates ahead on the 12th, the 19th, heading into the Preakness. We're going to be all over town. We're up in Bel Air on the 23rd. A lot of things happening locally here all month long, but nothing more important than the football team that doesn't play for 6 months after the baseball team's on fire. Let me just throw this to you, okay? I don't want to do next week's show this week, okay, because we'll have next week to talk about this. But big picture for you, from where you were 5 days ago, 7 days ago, Lamar in flux, draft, all this, what are we going to do? Even where Odell Beckham came into this 2 weeks ago. If they sign Rock Ya-Sin or cornerback X, respectable, serviceable second cornerback for X millions of dollars, and they get their cap and Lamar signs and they take pictures and tweet it all out and do all that. Where do you feel they are? Give me your Las Vegas scenario for where they are in the hierarchy of Bengals, Steelers having a good draft, Browns lurking, Chiefs are still the best team, the Bills are still the Bills, Justin Herbert hadn't won anything, Aaron Rodgers is playing up in a swamp now, like Belichick's a mess. Like, I'm trying to figure out their path to the Super Bowl now that they've spent the money, they have the quarterback, they have the players they want. You're more bullish on them than I am as a Super Bowl contender because I've seen the other quarterbacks and the other teams. I certainly think they're a better football team today than they were a week ago.
Well, I mean, they are because they know Lamar Jackson's going to be their quarterback compared to unnamed rookie, right? Or unnamed veteran acquisition. So,
or how about drama with angry Lamar playing for $32 million, which
sure,
I never
yeah,
thought.
Yeah, right. And we even mentioned that X factor, that, you know, just the idea that no one has to answer questions about that anymore, other than how happy are you that Lamar is back and he's going to be your quarterback the next 5 years. So I'll say this much. Look, it's a loaded AFC, and that's the case for everyone. About the only team that shrugs their shoulders at that notion is who? Kansas City, because they've done it, and they've done it multiple times now. They're the new Patriots, right? And that doesn't mean that they're going to do it for 20 years the way the Patriots did, but they're that team. They're the team that everyone else is looking up at and chasing. That's just reality now. But I'll say this much. I think the Ravens are a divisional round team. And then we'll see what happens after that. You know, I mean, it really does come down to it at that point, not just Lamar Jackson, but everyone, all those names we've mentioned, guys that have not broken through, everyone on this roster now, other than Justin Tucker, who was a rookie when the Ravens last won the Super Bowl and last made it to an AFC championship game. But my point is, I think they're a top four team in the AFC. Now, I'm not ready to say they're one. I'm not ready to say they're two. And I'm probably not ready to say they're three, although I think they're neck and neck with the Bengals. You know, I don't think the Bengals, even if they're better than them, I think it's by a little bit. You know? So it comes down to you get to that weekend and you need to break through. And do they have the ability to do that? I think on paper, there are compelling reasons to think that could happen, specifically with the offense and a bigger emphasis on the passing game than we've seen in years past. But they're still, you know, they're still going to run the ball. They're still going to be about their offensive line. They're still going to be about their defense. You know, Mike McDonald had this defense playing far better football in the second half last year than it did over the first half of the season. And Roquan Smith being a big part of that. So I think all the elements are there to put them right up there as having a chance and getting to the second weekend of the playoffs. And you see what happens after that. And, you know, that might sound a little wishy-washy, but, you know, am I going to sit here and say that I think they're the favorite to win the Super Bowl and I think they're absolutely the best team in the AFC? No. Do I think that they have the potential that they could be in that position by year's end? Yeah, I do. So, you know, ultimately, and we've seen this play out. 2020, after on the heels of 2019, lots of people thought they were going to win the Super Bowl because they were so amazing that previous year, and they were bringing just about everyone back other than, what, Marshall Yanda. And we saw what happened. You know, it was COVID. It was weird. And, you know, they had some injuries and, you know, they got eliminated in the second round. And then 2021, all hell broke loose in terms of the injuries. And, you know, they still haven't fully recovered from that when you really think about it. So it's tough. And as much as we all want to believe that you have your full destiny in your own hands, you know, for lack of a better description of it, there's a lot of luck involved and there are a lot of variables at work that, you know, your schedule, what happens to the, how injured or how healthy are the other teams when you're playing them? Who plays whom, when? I mean, there are a lot of factors at work there. And so I think to in the AFC, as it's presently constructed, as you mentioned, with all the additions and Aaron Rodgers now in New York, and, you know, if Tua comes back healthy, keep in mind the Dolphins were pretty darn good when he was healthy and upright and playing. You know, you've got 8-9 teams in the AFC that I wouldn't say they're all serious Super Bowl contenders, but I think they're all teams that right now can envision a somewhat realistic path to at least getting to the conference championship game. And that's usually not the case. Normally you're saying that about 4, maybe 5 teams. So it's going to be really tough. And a lot of it's going to come down to health and schedule and timing and all those different things. But I think the Ravens have acquitted themselves well with what they've been able to do, specifically in the month of April, starting with getting your quarterback under contract and putting that story to bed. And, you know, they've augmented. They need to do that at corner still. So I see them as being a top four team in the AFC. And then you're going to have to see what happens. I'm not going to go against the Chiefs until someone definitively, and I'm not talking about the Bengals doing it once, but I'm talking about someone definitively overtaking them. So the Chiefs remain the team to beat in the AFC, but I think the Ravens are right there with, you know, that next tier that's all trying to be the next team to get to the Super Bowl out of the conference.
One thing I will say over the weekend, and I sort of screwed up and watched too much NFL Network Friday and probably too much ESPN on Saturday and Sunday, quite frankly, because going back and forth, you can get a little mesmerized by all this. But going from one city to another, from one franchise to another, from one hopeless, awful franchise, all these Houston Texans drafting at the top and Carolina and new owners and Browns and your other versions of the Browns around the league, these bad teams. I never feel that way in regard to the Ravens, but certainly this last 6 months has been choppy waters for the franchise to try to get to where they are. And then you look around the league and you see these teams that don't have a prayer. And then you see other teams that are sort of coming on in some way with whatever the new thing is, whether it's in Jacksonville where they start to believe a little bit, in Tennessee where they draft a quarterback later and feel like Indianapolis and all these sort of underbelly teams that are on this. Some of these teams are on the schedule. I saw the schedule the other day. By the way, schedule's 10 days out too. We might want to mention that. And I looked at the Ravens play on the West Coast three times. They might get a London game. They might not because they have a couple of teams that are in that popcorn machine to maybe get that. But they have a softish kind of schedule against some of the really bad teams that could help them out. But I don't know that there's easy weeks anymore in a lot of places here where we're talking about the Lions being okay and the Jets being okay. And some of the teams that have been real dregs, maybe making a step up a little bit this year and wondering where those teams are in the 32 and wondering where the Dreamers are. Because to your point, Kansas City's not going to win every year. But where is that step-up team? Where is that step-up franchise? Who are we looking at the schedule and thinking they're a cupcake and they're going to be a lot harder to beat in the year? And in doing that over the weekend and looking at who's leading teams and, oh, where's Frank Reich coaching now? And who's the quarterback there? And where'd that coordinator go? It's a time of hope in a lot of places. And I think it is great that we have hope here. That this isn't one of the bad places. We've seen that. But there are other places where they're working hard and some places where they're trying to step up. I find it weird that they're talking about the Lions being a contender. That's weird.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Jacksonville do what they did last year, even with the comeback in the first round and whatnot. So
hey,
I mean,
Cincinnati's like the best team in the division. Like I heard Steelers people ish talking to Bengals and I'm thinking, you don't hate us anymore. What's wrong?
Yeah. I mean, and you just mentioned it. I mean, Steelers, Browns, I mean, I still think they're a step behind the Bengals and the Ravens in terms of duking it out for the division. But yeah, the point is, it's a really competitive AFC. And, you know, I'll go back to you and I arguing about Lamar and, you know, I'll bring up his regular season record and you say you don't care. I mean, for me, at this point, unless you're going to be the number one seed, get in the dance and then it's time to go. Right. I mean, whether you're playing on the road, what stadium, what the weather is, whatever, it's time to go. And I think the Ravens are, again, that team that's fully capable of getting to the divisional round. And then we'll see what happens after that. I mean, it's a loaded AFC. You mentioned Trevor Lawrence or, you know, you've mentioned Aaron Rodgers. How about the fact you have Sean Payton in Denver now with Russell Wilson? I mean, look, Russell Wilson was a disaster last year. Am I ready to say he's totally done? Not yet. I'm not saying they're a top three or four team in the conference, but there might be something there to revitalize him a little bit. So you've got a lot of teams and a lot of quality quarterbacks in this conference. So to sit here and try to say on May 1st or May 15th or June 1st, if I think the Ravens are winning the Super Bowl, it's, you know, That's a tough ask to try to look into the crystal ball at that point in time, because you still have Kansas City at the top of the mountain. But I do think the Ravens have done well for themselves. And again, like you said, after these months of choppy waters, and let's just face it, it was just a bad vibe all the way around. You know, not even talking about press conferences or anything like, or Lamar's tweets or anything like that. Just talking about just how it felt. It was a lousy feeling. This was not a fun start to the offseason whatsoever. And that all changed just a few hours before the draft started when the news trickled out that Lamar had come to terms with the Ravens. I think it, you know, it completely changed their offseason. It changed the tone of the draft. And not that it was this world-changing kind of draft, but I think they feel solid and good about what they were able to accomplish. And now you get into spring workouts and you assume you're going to see your quarterback there. I think we will see Lamar there for OTAs. It'd be a terrible look if he wasn't, you know. So I fully expect to see him there. And, you know, it will get back to much more of a business as usual from a football standpoint. And this team, this quarterback, this team has a lot to prove in terms of not regular season. We're beyond that. That's why even talking about the schedule, it's like play well enough to make the playoffs, right? And then after that, that's when your legacy really starts to be defined. And that's where they are at this point. Entering year six of the Lamar Jackson era. I mean, they made it to the playoffs 4 out of 5 years, and that's an accomplishment. To your point, talk about some of the have-nots over the course of draft weekend and seeing how many of these teams are back at it, drafting a quarterback and whatnot. But it's go time. It really is for them. So I think they have a chance absolutely to be one of the top four teams in the conference. And then, hey, you got to go do it. Whether it's going to Buffalo or going to Kansas City or going to Cincinnati or one of those teams coming here, it's go time. You know, you want to be a champion, you got to go out and win games in January. And to this point, you know, they've struggled to do that this current era of Ravens football.
10 days out on the schedule release, and the Ravens have 9 home games this year. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at McFall's Oyster and Reel on Thursday in Middle River. We're getting ready for everything. All of it brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. The way to reach them, you buy 2, you get 2 free, and you get 5 years, 0% financing. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery have given me these instant lottery scratch-offs. I'll be giving away at McFall's this week. We're going to be at the local up in Bel Air later on in the month. We're going to be moving around the city. I got a downtown location targeted for the 12th. We have Preakness in town this month. We have the Orioles with full relevance. It is the first off season where we just don't have to talk football, more football, and just waiting on football, because we have baseball tonight and tomorrow night and the next day and the next day. And Luke will be there to monitor all that. He is Baltimore Luke. You can follow him out on the Instagram and on the interwebs and Twitter. If there's any breaking news, you'll get it first on the WNST Tech Service, brought to you by our friends at Coons Baltimore Ford. I got a little Rofo coffee in my Cole Roofing mug here today. I had a little pep in my step. It's been a great weekend. At some point, the weather will come along, and it won't be fall any longer in May. We'll have some baseball around here. But good tidings and better vibes. It truly is a Baltimore positive version of Baltimore positive. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore sports and Baltimore positive here in the spring.